Hello and welcome to the Majlis podcast, Ready for Everyday Liberties, current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Ready for Everyday Liberties media manager here in Washington, D.C. Today, during my internet surf about the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic in Central Asia, I came across a horrific picture. The image was taken by one of our reporters in Shymkent, Kazakhstan, where piles of dead bodies are seen lying on asphalt in front of a morgue. According to the recent reports coming out of Kazakhstan, it might be just the tip of the iceberg because in recent days, the daily tally of new COVID cases in the country has surpassed the numbers we got used to during the peak of the pandemic last year. However, it is not only Kazakhstan. In Tajikistan, the pandemic has reached the family members of the president. In Turkmenistan, towns have gone back to lockdown, and there are concerning reports from the rest of the region. It looks like the pandemic is fully back, but the region seems to be unable to catch up in preventive measures with the pace at which the virus is spreading. So what is going on and what the future holds for the region? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Dr. Bauzhan Jusupov, research coordinator at the Kazakh National Medical University in Kazakhstan, who's joining us from Almaty today. Aybek Mukhametov, the head of the healthcare program at the Soros Foundation in Kyrgyzstan. Aybek is joining us from Bishkek. Farokh Yusupi, the director of Radio Free Republic Liberty's Turkmen Service, joining us from Prague. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Republic Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi, also joining us from Prague. Thank you very much, colleagues, for joining us today. So let's start with you, Dr. Jusupov. So could you please paint us the overall picture of the pandemic in Kazakhstan? What we hear from news, as I was just talking about a little bit earlier, is that the official number of daily infection is around 8,000 these days, which seems way higher than during the earlier peak of the infection last year. So why we are here?
I think that when we compare the situation in this year with the situation of the last year, we may do a wrong conclusion about magnitude of epidemic. Mm-hmm. I believe that we experienced much worse situation last year, even if only 2,000 cases were reported then.
Okay.
You know, according to Kazakh National Statistical Bureau, exit mortality in July of the last year was around 20,000 people. So it means that roughly...
Dr. Jusupov, we don't hear you. Dr. Jusupov?
I think he has bad connection.
It looks like he does. I hope he will be able to join us. So, Aybek, how's the situation in Kyrgyzstan?
As for the last days, I could say that the epidemic curve is going down. And I could slightly say that we already passed the third wave of the COVID-19 epidemic in Kyrgyzstan. In comparing to last year, when it was first time in June, July, this wave was also intensive. And we had, according to our short-term prognosis or forecasting of the epidemic curve, we had around 1,500 cases per day. Same forecast and prognosis we have made with our colleagues from Oxford University. And we think that we were exactly clear and exactly right about the timeline of the third epidemic wave and about the date, the cases and the numbers. In terms of, very briefly, in terms of the preparation to this, let's say, wave, I could say that our state institutions, I mean health institutions, our government, and, you know, our donor agencies and the civil society were much more prepared to this third wave. So we had more trained staff, medical staff, educated people at the hospitals, at the outpatient care level. Then we had no panic among the population. That was very crucial. And we had enough stocks and enough amounts of the essential medicines. And the last thing, but not least, I think the coordination in our country was much more better in terms of the managing of the referrals from outpatient care to inpatient level, etc.
So, Aybek, you are saying that Kyrgyzstan has, you know, performing better in this wave, which you say it's a third wave. When we say wave, are we talking about the Delta variant or something else?
That's very interesting question. Here we still have discussions in our country, because according to the data from the Ministry of Health, the official data which we had already in the beginning of April, our Minister of Health and our colleagues from the Ministry of Health announced and presented officially that from the cases which were tested in February, so we know that we are delivering the analysis for another countries for this special procedure to do sequencing of the strains. So after we got the results, the Minister of Health announced that we have all four strains. So we had for February, we had the Delta Stam, we had the strain from South Africa, we had strain from, you know, classic one, Wuhan strain, and the last one won the so-called Great Britain strain from GB. So according to the recent information, again, from the Ministry of Health, which was also announced just recently, maybe 2 weeks ago, from the 12 cases, we didn't detect the Delta strain. And still we have a discussions in our country. If we are facing Delta strain COVID-19, third wave or not, that's still a discussion.
I certainly have a follow-up question on that, but Dr. Yusupov is back, so we cut off. In the meantime, we ended up talking about Kyrgyzstan, and we have Aybek Mukametov from there. And he's saying that compared to the last year, Kyrgyzstan is performing much better in terms of number of cases, in terms of the preventive measures. If that is the case in Kyrgyzstan, it certainly doesn't look like the same in Kazakhstan. You said that the comparison is not a good idea here, but, you know, numbers matter. Like 2,000 infections daily last year and now 8,000 daily infections these days. So numbers really matter. So whether we'd like to draw a comparison or not, the numbers are still there. I mean, how come Kazakhstan is there where it is while Kyrgyzstan seems to be performing better?
Of course, the number is matter, but we can compare a situation when we have similar conditions like coverage of testing and sensitivity of testing, etc. Now we conducted much more tests a day than maybe two times more than in the previous year. First, second, you know, sensitivity of PCR testing last year was awful, and probably you are familiar that CNN and other big news agencies they spread information about new disease, so-called new pneumonia, from Kazakhstan, in Kazakhstan. But then our Ministry of Health and WHO, they agreed that it is not new, but it is COVID-19. So now we have 8,000 a day and much more death registered a day. But still, I believe that the situation in the previous year was much worse. And I agree with a previous speaker that countries now are preparing much better than before. And now we are doing much more tests. We have much more beds. And in last year, we have 30,000 beds occupied. But now we have the same number of beds occupied, but we still have some beds free for COVID-19 patients. So and it's not panic as in Kyrgyzstan. But situation is really very bad because it's from 130 till 150 deaths a day. And very bad situation.
Yeah,
and
so,
why? Because we have Delta variant here in Kazakhstan, and I do not know exact numbers, but around 70-80% of all specimen tested for variants detected 60-70% of these specimens.
Interesting. Okay. So, Dr. Yusupov, is there any region which stands out in terms of the spread of this wave of infection in Kazakhstan? Is there any region which more affected by the other region? Like I was just earlier mentioning the Shymkent. Maybe Shymkent is not a good example to give here. I mean, as you are on the ground in this field, how regions are compared in terms of the rates of the infections and what stands out in that specific region which is most affected?
The new wave caused by Delta variant started from two capitals, from Nur-Sultan and Almaty. And Nur-Sultan was affected first. And then Almaty, and then neighboring regions like Almaty region, Karaganda region. In other areas, so, but this Delta variant spread for all regions for now. And even Turkestan region in South Kazakhstan, which is considered as placed in yellow zone, but based on our data and some anecdotal stories, we may conclude that situation there is also epidemiological situation is really very bad. And also, you know, regions have different capacity for lab testing. And sometimes, even if we have different figures, different incidence rates in regions, so it's really very difficult to conclude that we have some regions in good conditions, some regions in bad. For now, I believe that the whole country is affected by Delta variant.
Interesting. So whole country is affected by Delta variant in Kazakhstan, which is your neighbor, Aybek. How come Kyrgyzstan is not affected by that? I mean, that kind of makes me to question the official stats that you were relying again and again in your previous answer. So can we really rely on what the authorities are saying?
I could say that in terms of the some statistic, we could say, it's my personal opinion, maybe I'm wrong, that I could say slightly that slightly the official statistics about the COVID-19 cases now is a bit underestimated. And it's not only my opinion.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean by that, David?
I mean that I totally trust for the official statistics in terms of, you know, changing the data, changing the figures. That's not the case. But I think that we have a problem here in Kyrgyzstan, at least for some regions, that we have small numbers of the case of the tested cases, you know. And it's not the secret. I don't know about the other countries, border countries, but it's also the problem of the national testings, let's say, system. And it's not the problem of the lack of the tests themselves, but I think it's a problem of the management. And in this regard, I could say that we have had underestimated data even in June and July. But for now, even comparing to the proxy data, for instance, the numbers of the patients who are now hospitalized in our hospitals in all regions, we could say that even taking into account all of these proxy figures, we could say that still we could rely on the official data, and we could say that the third wave is going down. I think I explained the point, yes?
Okay, let's see. I will get back to it. I have more questions to you, Aybek. But again, there's a country where I think believing to official statistics might lead you to really a wrong conclusion. Turkmenistan, Farooq, it's a kind of strange case. You know, as a journalist, of course, we have to stand on neutral grounds, but the level of continued denial in the face of so many contradicting reports is really kind of frustrating. So tell us about what's going on there and what the official statistics are.
As you already mentioned, that Turkmenistan is still in complete denial, I should say. They still claim that there is no single case registered in Turkmenistan since the start of the pandemic. But we know that's not true. We know that at the moment, major hospitals across the country are going under lockdown. In Lebap and Mari province, like district of Farab, and some neighboring villages to main city Turkmenabad are under lockdown. You cannot even travel between the districts to the central town of the Lebap province. During the last week, including today, several districts in Mari province were put under lockdown after hotspots were identified. And the doctors that are talking with us, they all say this is the Delta variant. Of course, I mean, it might sound frustrating for us, but one can only imagine how frustrating it is for the doctors and for the people who are suffering from COVID inside the country, that the authorities still, for some unknown reason, maintain that there are no COVID cases. We know for a fact that in Lebap's provincial hospital, every day at least 20-25 people die. That's we're talking about one hospital. But there are many other hospitals that are redesigned to accept the COVID-19 patients, and they are now accepting only patients who are older than 50 years. Those under 50 years of age are being sent home and told to get treatment at home under the supervision of GPs. So the situation is very dire. And the government doesn't know how to deal with it. It's not surprising because government fails on all fronts. Interestingly, during the summit of the Central Asian presidents last week, there were cases of COVID identified among the participants of the events, including there were a few people that came from with the foreign governments. I will not name that country in order not to sound if I'm criticizing other governments. But one of those tests who tested positives was a cook that came with a foreign delegation to that event, and he was serving food. You can imagine what kind of a super spreader event that was.
It's also interesting, Farouk. On one hand, authorities in Turkmenistan might remain in denial of that, but you know, this denial has a real impact on people. Like, if government does not accept that there's a case, I guess this is also going to affect into what kind of measures they take to curb the pandemic or its infection. You know, we are talking about too much about Turkmenistan. Bruce, I will come to you to talk about Tajikistan in a second. So what I was trying to say is, Farouk, like, I'm talking about here now in terms of the measures, how the Turkmenistan's denials affect it is measures that the authorities are taking in the country. So even in Central Asian context, over the past months, we have seen markets being closed, offices being closed, academic institutions being closed, and switching into a remote working environment. Has there been anything like this happening recently? As you say, the cases are again rising in the country.
You are right. I mean, if you don't recognize the problem, how can you solve it? In terms of going back on lockdown, yes, Turkmenistan, first of all, they canceled the international flights last year, and they, as far as we know, they are not planning to resume them until at least March of 2022. But last week, they canceled the flights between the regions. There are only flights now operating between the capital, Ashgabat, and to provincial capitals, but no flights between the provincial capitals. For example, you cannot fly from Mari to Dashogus or from Turkmenabad to Balkanabad. So all the flights are cancelled. Also, they reduced number of trains between the regions. And as I said, they completely shut down movement between many regions. Even within one region, you cannot travel from one town to another one at the moment. So even in a funny situation, Turkmen government forces so-called budget workers to buy vacation packages to Avaza in order to get some revenues. But for traveling to Avaza, those people have to go through hell of checkups. Like, they have to get PCR tests, they have to get certificates from various medical organizations in order to travel, to be eligible to travel to Avaza. So it's a very funny situation, but not, I mean, funny in the sense of tragic, how funny, people are suffering from it.
So on that kind of a tragic, funny situation, Bruce, in the case of Tajikistan, the president's family members are among the victims, I guess, of the COVID-19. A couple of days ago, there was a funny, tragic news trending on Twitter in which the nephews of Tajik president said to have beaten up severely the health minister because their mother passed away of COVID-19 infection. So what's the situation in Tajikistan?
Boy, now what's the situation? I suppose that's a big question for a lot of people. You know, they were late even admitting they had any cases, if you remember. I mean, it wasn't until, I believe, late April last year that they finally admitted that they had cases in the country. And then right away, it wasn't just one, but it was like right away they said, okay, well, we found it and like seven people got it. And then it went up for a while, but it was never at the levels of some of the other, really all the other Central Asian states. Turkmenistan, as we've heard, where they had zero officially, you know. But then the Tajik government said at the start of this year that they'd won the battle against COVID, and they didn't have any more cases. But, you know, recently there was always a lot of doubts, you know, even when they said they had it, everyone figured the figures were way, way low, you know. And then when they said that they didn't have it anymore and they'd won the battle and all that kind of stuff, nobody believed that either. So late, all of a sudden it came back, you know, a little more than a month ago, they had to admit that there were cases in the country again, you know. And like you said, it even hit Rahman's family, you know. Why the nephews would take this out on the health minister, I don't know. Why Rahman's sister didn't get a vaccine, it amazes me. I'm not sure what's going on. You know, they're certainly getting a lot of deliveries of the vaccine from all around the world.
Yeah.
There's not enough for everyone, but there's enough for a lot of people. And you would have figured the first family would have gotten it for sure. But, you know, just to put this in perspective, now, what we got in Tajikistan, to compare it to with the other states, right? Tajikistan officially says that it has recorded less than 16,000 cases of COVID since it started, right? Kyrgyzstan has reported 170,000 cases since it started, and Kazakhstan's reported 665,000 since it started, right? Mm-hmm. Now, Tajikistan's 9.5 million people, Kyrgyzstan 6.5 million people, and yet Kyrgyzstan has 170,000 cases and Tajikistan has 15,000 cases. Something's wrong. And Tajikistan only has officially 123 deaths, but you know, I couldn't say how many officials have died, but there's been a lot of officials, not just in Rahman's family, but a lot of officials, former and current, that have died, and people in the military that have died, and just them alone, the reports of just the people, you know, government employees that have died, seems to me like it would already be about 123. But you know, the fact that Rahman's sister can die of this, she would have had access to much better medical care than the average citizen, shows you, or at least gives you a hint of what it must be like for the rest of the citizens of that country who don't need medical attention, you know, and maybe haven't got, you know, the vaccine yet. So, you know, it's clearly far, far worse than the Tajik government has far admitted. Yeah.
And just for the sake of time, we also need to be moving very quickly. So in Uzbekistan, Bruce, the latest report I have seen coming out of our Uzbek service, Ozotlik, authorities there are opening up mosques, I guess, for Friday prayers again. I guess things are better in Uzbekistan compared to the others.
Again, we don't know. You know, the number of reported daily cases has gone up. You know, it's really, really suspiciously very, very low. For a long time, they weren't willing to announce that they had any more than just under 800 cases a day. And that was going on for, you know, like 10 days in a row. It was always 792 or 766 or something. But, you know, recently they've started to report, you know, upper 800 and something, even 900 and something. But again, you know, we got these weird figures. Uzbekistan, population 35 million, right? So it's twice the size of Kazakhstan in terms of population. And yet they only have 140,000 reported cases, you know, which is like 25% of the number of cases that Kazakhstan's reported or something, which doesn't seem credible. They only have 956 deaths. You know, Kazakhstan has more than 7,000 people they've reported as dead. Now, how do you pull that off in a country of 35 million people? You know, so once again, we got figures from the Uzbek government, but especially that bit about the daily cases where it wouldn't break 800 for a long time. That's pretty much a red flag that something's going on. You don't get just always in a narrow band cases, you know, that stay right approximately the same number for days in a row. That doesn't happen usually.
Very interesting lay of land there as the region going through a God knows which wave we are talking about these days. You know, I could never distinguish which wave Central Asia is at the given time. You know, it's been also confusing picture all along. Also confusing was what the region has been doing about it. How's the vaccination process has been going on in recent months, you know, which kind of gives another confusing outlook as to what might be in the store going forward. So let's continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Dr. Bauırjan Jusupov, Research Coordinator at the Kazakh National Medical University in Kazakhstan, Aybek Mukhammedov, the Head of the Healthcare Program at the Soros Foundation in Kyrgyzstan, Farouk Yusupi, the Director of Radio Free Press Liberty's Turkmen Service, and Bruce Panier, the Editor of Radio Free Press Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Press Liberty's Media Manager here in Washington, D.C., and we are doing a kind of reality check on the impact of COVID-19 as the whole world is grappling with the spread of Delta variant. Okay, on the preventive front, Dr. Jusupov, where is the country in terms of the vaccination? What number of people are vaccinated and where those vaccines are coming from?
We have 19 million population in Kazakhstan. We have 4 million people who got the whole course of vaccination, and 6 million at least one, more than 6 million at least one dose. And we may subtract 6 million people under age 18. So, and probably for now, we have almost 50% of vaccine coverage by at least one jab. I think, of course, it is not enough to stop the epidemic. And, you know, this epidemic is compete with a vaccination campaign in Kazakhstan. So, but probably vaccination at least will decrease tempo of epidemic in upcoming weeks. So, and but we have many controversies in this vaccination campaign. Because some categories of employees should be vaccinated according to order of Chief Sanitary Doctor of Kazakhstan. And we have many people who refuse to be vaccinated. Many reasons why. I believe the first reason is that people cannot get enough information or cannot rely on official information about vaccine efficacy, vaccine safety, vaccine effectiveness. Because the most popular vaccine in Kazakhstan is Sputnik V, and production is localized in Kazakhstan, but still, you know, Sputnik is not registered by European Union and is not pre-qualified by WHO due to some reasons. So, but we have two Chinese vaccines produced by Sinovac and Sinopharm. Also, I think we have planned to purchase Pfizer vaccine, and we have our own CASVAC vaccine.
So, yeah, how's that CASVAC vaccine is doing? Is it
so? It is a really very, very interesting question. So, just researchers announced that results on third stage of clinical trial would be available in July, but still we have not got any result from the third stage of clinical trial on CASVAC. But as it was announced, CASVAC is available in some cities, in some regions of Kazakhstan.
But the trial period...
Proportion of CASVAC in the whole amount of vaccine is relatively small.
But you are saying that the result of the third trial is not yet public, but still the CASVAC is applied, like it's being used at the moment as a preventive measures?
CASVAC got emergency use approval by Kazakh Ministry of Health in December, I believe. And under this authorization, CASVAC is distributed now among population. So it's not full authorized for use.
Interesting, but still like 50% of vaccination coverage, at least one jab in Kazakhstan. That's
among adult population,
Adult population, okay. So you are also saying that there are still some hesitancy in terms of whether to get the vaccine or not. I mean, is there any policy decision coming up in terms of whether, I mean, there are countries who are talking about mandating a vaccination in the country. Is there anything like that is happening in Kazakhstan?
I mentioned that some categories of employees should be vaccinated.
That's per the policy. So,
yes, yes. So, for example, medical personnel, teachers, and all employees working in service, so should be vaccinated. Who have direct contact with clients.
Clients, yeah. So what happens if they don't get vaccinated?
I believe employer will be fined, and these people will not be allowed to work.
And vaccines are, I expect, available widely if anyone wants to take and just goes and takes it, right?
Yeah, you know, we have vaccines in medical facilities and even in malls. And but, you know, people just prefer to get some vaccines approved by WHO, for example. They are waiting Sinopharm or Sinovac vaccines, or even they hope to get Pfizer vaccine in future, that just to postpone their decision to be vaccinated, because these vaccines are still not available in Kazakhstan.
So what is available is the Russian Sputnik V?
Sputnik V and CASVAC. Okay. Now it was announced that Sinopharm vaccine will be available very, very soon.
Okay. So what about the situation of vaccination in Kyrgyzstan, Aybek?
Yeah, I could say that for now, we have in total 2,500,000 doses of Sinopharm vaccine, which were delivered to our country, and the vast majority of them were purchased at the expense of the Republican budget. And I could say that we started the massive campaign, vaccination campaign, from this, you know, big batch of the Chinese vaccine. Of course, we were waited for the COVAX mechanism, and we waited AstraZeneca vaccine in March and April. But unfortunately, for many reasons, and you know about them, maybe some of them were about our bureaucracy, some of them were linked to the situation in India, which were planned actually to deliver this vaccine under the COVAX mechanism to Kyrgyzstan, but then, you know, needed it for themselves. But finally, we got under the COVAX mechanism more than 220 doses of AstraZeneca, and we have been donated from Azerbaijan 40,000 of doses just recently. As for the Sputnik V Russian vaccine, we have purchased from the state budget 120,000 doses of Sputnik V, which could be delivered to vaccinate around 60,000 of people in Kyrgyzstan, and the vast majority of them, under the special recommendation of the Ministry of Health, were, let's say, managed for the people who are above 60 plus year, who had chronic diseases. Yeah. So the last thing about the Sputnik V, we actually waited from the Russian Federation some donations from, let's say, February, but unfortunately for many reasons, and we don't know all of them, they still not delivered this donation to Kyrgyzstan. So about the Kazakh, we are also thankful to our Kazakh colleagues and Kazakh government, which donated around 25,000 doses of Kazvak, but they are still have not been managed. They just, you know, under the, you know, these preparation processes.
So it looks like, and it looks like, Ivek, like you got lots of vaccines from China and thousands of from other sources. So what's the rate
around
of vaccination? What's the rate of vaccination? I mean, what percentage of your population has been vaccinated at this moment?
The total number have received the first dose of vaccine, and it doesn't matter what vaccine. So is 547,000 people in Kyrgyzstan, which represent around 21% of those who should be vaccinated. And we have more than 188,000 people who received the full vaccination, which represents 7% of the number of people to be vaccinated.
Very, very small, isn't it? Very small percentage.
Very small. Unfortunately, very small. And the dynamic is still poor, I could say. And it's also the official the position of our government is that we still have this poor dynamic of vaccination campaign. And as our colleague from Kazakhstan said, Dr. Baljan, among our population, we still have these myths and some misunderstanding of the, you know, efficacy of the vaccines, of the some, you know, maybe side effects, and the, some cases when people were dying. But there is still, you know, examination going on from what reason they died. It's and it's not might be vaccine, the cause of this death. So I could say that we still had need to have a massive media campaign among our population, and I think we still need some additional measures from our government in order to cover more and more people. And last thing about this, let's say, obligatory vaccination. As in Kazakhstan, we have a special decree and requirement from our state institutions to cover by vaccination all staff working in state institutions, you know, starting from medical staff of the hospitals and family healthcare centers, and you know, teachers, and you know, people who work in the police, etc. But still, we have a lot of, you know, huge amount of people who are working in so-called informal sector of our economy. So, and this is a huge, you know, barrier now and challenge to our government, how to cover them and how not to force them but to motivate them.
Okay, we are getting way over time. I have one or two more points to raise before we end the conversation, Bruce and Farouk. Any thoughts on vaccination or other preventive measures when you look into the rest of the region? I mean, just feel free to jump in, whoever wants to be first. Let's start with Turkmenistan. It's an interesting case always, Farooq.
Okay. Yeah, in Turkmenistan, as you know, Turkmenistan is has made vaccination mandatory for all population, all people above 18 years of age. But the vaccination push is in disarray, as anything would be in Turkmenistan. They were vaccinating people, but we don't know like how those vaccines were administered, because we hear that there were quite severe side effects, including deaths among those vaccinated. Turkmenistan at the beginning received some donations from Russia. That's why they were the first to register Sputnik V and the second vaccine, Epivac Corona or something. And then they received some donation from China for the Chinese vaccine. But after that, they were told to pay for vaccines, and they were buying vaccines from China, from Russia. But at the moment, they don't have money. And that's why, as of this week, they started charging people for the vaccines. So we know that they are charging anywhere from 150 to 200 manats per dose. That's quite a considerable money in Turkmenistan, given that the average salary is 1,200 manats. And in Turkmenistan, there also was vaccine misinformation or disinformation, whatever you call it. But the problem now is they don't have enough vaccines. In some places, they have enough stock. That's why, in order to report the numbers, they are not waiting the mandatory 3 to 4 weeks between the vaccines. They are waiting 1 week and making the vaccine so that they can report the numbers to Ashgabat. In Ashgabat, there is a shortage of vaccines and people can't get their second doses. Mm. So it's in complete disarray in Turkmenistan.
So speaking of numbers, Farooq, do we have any concrete number to the percentage of how many people?
No, we don't have any concrete numbers, because Turkmenistan doesn't publish numbers. Mm. Even like for boasting, they will not publish the numbers.
Mm, interesting. Okay.
Because they generally don't want to talk about coronavirus.
Mm. It is again kind of funny, tragic, interesting news that, you know, on one hand, Turkmenistan just doesn't want to talk about COVID-19 and remains officially in denial of it. But recently, they also received like $20 million from World Bank for the COVID response sort of projects. I don't know what they are doing with that money.
It was not like given by World Bank. Mm. As a gesture, it was requested by the Turkmen government, by the way.
Interesting. So, Bruce, of course, we have to talk about Uzbekistan, but also, is there any question that boggles your mind that I'm skipping? Our guests, especially from Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, they have like great insight as to what the lay of land is in terms of the government response. So please feel free to jump in, ask if you have any question. Otherwise, also in Uzbekistan or Tajikistan, whichever country you want to tackle first. I mean, what sort of measures are they taking in terms of the prevention of any other wave of COVID cases, infections, and also in terms of vaccination, how that has been going on there? I mean, it was great news to hear, although it's not yet on the level that one want to see, like 50% of the eligible population in Kazakhstan being vaccinated. It just looks like a great number when compared to like 7% in Kyrgyzstan. Perhaps, I don't know what the number is in Turkmenistan is, how it looks like in Tajikistan and in Uzbekistan, and what are the other measures they are taking, visible measures?
In Tajikistan, you don't see much mentioned about it in the press. Mm. I mean, obviously they report that they're getting vaccines and that they're coming in, and people are kind of encouraged to go and get vaccinated, but there's not a big public media push that I've seen anyway, that I've noticed. For people to go down and get vaccinated, despite the fact that it's hit Brakman's family. I mean, not just his sister, but one of his sons-in-law came down with it too. And there's other people that they think might have got it that are in that family. Uzbekistan's very different. They keep their numbers low and everything like that. The officials are telling people, like starting to tell people, that you could lose your job if you're not vaccinated. Mm. You have to have proof you're vaccinated, and if you're not, or if you have some fake proof, a document to show you're vaccinated, you could be gone. The military is absolutely mandated to get everyone 100% vaccination in the military. You know, and there's even been some politicians, one anyway, that suggested that unvaccinated people should be kicked out of the country.
Hmm.
You know, there's a real hardcore message that officials are spreading that are, you know, that's basically you should get vaccinated or it's going to be trouble for you.
Hmm.
But the question I would ask for our guests actually is, you know, this is one of the questions they're asking around the world now, is that what percentage of people that are being admitted to the hospital have already been vaccinated?
Hmm.
It seems that very few. Among the, you know, they're admitting, we see new cases every day and we see people being admitted to hospitals. But is it true that in Kyrgyzstan and Kazakhstan, only a very small percentage of vaccinated people are being in the hospital and having problems with this? Because, of course, that's a message you want to get out to the population.
Yeah.
If you get vaccinated, you're part of this very low percentage that or at least your odds are so much better that you won't get this.
Mm.
And even if you do, it won't be as bad.
Yeah. Dr. Bowerjan, let's start with you. So I guess the question is clear there. I mean, what Bruce is saying is like, just to rephrase, the number of people who have gotten this virus, what percentage of them represents the ones who have already taken vaccine?
It's really a very interesting question. And unfortunately, I don't have any answer.
Mm.
Because recently, Minister of Health announced that only 0.1% of all cases registered COVID-19 registered were vaccinated. So, but still, we have a relatively developed medical information system in place, but many of these systems are not integrated with each other, and we don't have any just precise figures about number of patients in hospitals already vaccinated or number of deaths among vaccinated. So, but still, I can rely only on anecdotal stories. So, and I heard that many people vaccinated got infected,
mm.
but many of them have a mild form of COVID-19.
Mm.
So, and I believe that in upcoming days, just Minister of Health can match these different databases to provide exact figures about efficacy or effectiveness of vaccine for prevention hospitalization from COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. Ivek, is there any figure that you have for the question that, you know, those people who got sick, what percentage of them have completed their vaccination or what percentage is not? I mean, it's just we are trying to understand the effectiveness of the vaccine.
Yeah, I could say that we have completely same situation comparing to Kazakhstan. Mm-hmm. So we have not still sophisticated architecture of the electronic system which could collect the information and connect information from hospitals and from epidemiologists, etc. In this regard, I could say that our Ministry of Health experts and some independent experts now work on this, let's say, conclusions and analysis. But I don't have still this data. Maybe we'll be able to do it a bit later, fall.
Mm.
But we only have the anecdotal data and there's some stories from our medical staff working in hospitals saying that really few percentage of people who have been vaccinated, they face in the emergency unit with the severe forms of COVID-19.
Thank you very much, Ivek. Actually, you brought us to a very good point where we could wrap up the conversation here in terms of what you like to see happening going forward. We are where we are now. I mean, in some cases, the pandemic is back in full scale. In some countries, maybe the effect is not seen as compared to the other countries. But we are facing this situation. The whole world is facing this situation. So going forward, what do we really like to see happening to get out of this crisis, to be able to prevent this from turning into a crisis? So let's end the conversation with final question. Maybe Dr. Zhusupov, you are in the middle of this thing. You have seen this in the country, Kazakhstan, trying to deal with the situation for the last 1.5 years now. Having that in mind, and again, being in the middle of this kind of pandemic, going forward, what do you like to see happening that can lead us into a brighter day?
So maybe in the beginning of this year, I could predict something. So I expected that this pandemic would end by the end of this year. For now, I'm not really very sure about future situation, future epidemiological situation, but I understand completely that vaccination is key for prevention, for combat COVID-19 pandemic. But at least we can expect some new variants, and many messages from different countries of the world that effectiveness of a vaccine for Delta variant is relatively low, just to prevent cases, symptomatic cases, around 60%. So, and I expect that if we will get proper coverage by vaccination, and a vaccine will work good for preventing a severe form of this disease, we may face the same situation as for flu. So, because if you look at Netherlands, UK, and other European countries with high vaccine coverage, mortality or case fatality rate is relatively small. And it is still bigger than for flu, but it's not like just 1 year ago.
Right, yeah. The same question to all of you, and then with that we are going to wrap up the conversation here. I mean, this is the saying, like, these days, like, unless whole world is safe, no one is safe. So, I mean, we have also this experience of over the past 1.5 years of dealing with this situation. So going forward, what are the sort of wish lists, Bruce, Farouk, or Ibek, you would like to see Central Asian authorities to take so that we are out of this crisis? What are the items in your wish list to see happening?
Okay.
Yeah, I think if we talk about Turkmenistan and frankly other countries too, I think they should start giving true information, like starting with Turkmenistan. They should admit that there is a problem, and the problem is very serious, and start solving the problem. Like we see that Kazakhstan has been a champion in the region in terms of giving more or less true statistical numbers that paints the picture of the real situation. And I think other countries, not only Turkmenistan, also should follow the suit of Kazakhstan and start tackling the situation by admitting that it is serious, and take the right measures. And they don't have to invent the bicycle. They can see how some of the European countries are doing, how the US is. I don't want to say that the US has done very good, but they are trying very, very hard to do it. I mean, the government is trying to do the right thing. So I think if they did this, if they approached it from the point of truth of the situation, they can succeed in certain degree in averting this crisis.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Speaking of the U.S., again, it's not to defend what the U.S. does, but the news is that 70% of the eligible population has taken at least one jab of vaccine. Just I wanted to throw that.
Yes.
Yeah. Bruce and Ibek. Ibek, yeah, let's go with you. In terms of the wish list you would like to see going forward, the authorities or the whole country taking.
My wish list is same like in last year. So we should have and we should maintain fast, effective vaccination campaign in our countries, at least in Kyrgyzstan. I think it should be focused on the most vulnerable groups. So people who are above 60 plus, and then people with chronic diseases, with the risk factors, etc. Then I think we need our authorities and state institutions and government should invest more to the health system strengthening and to the emergency preparedness to the next phases of waves of COVID-19 epidemic in our countries, and maybe to the future challenges in terms of pandemics. Then the last thing but not least, I think we need to be also prepared in terms of analysis of the situation, in terms of prognosis, forecasting, and mathematic modeling.
Yeah, okay, Bruce, your wish list. And also, I was just wondering, like, these five countries in Central Asia, and in terms of the policy, it looks like they have relatively different approaches compared to each other. In some countries, like, there is no way out of not taking the vaccine. In some countries, it looks like a little bit loose. I was just wondering whether mandating vaccination should be one of the options in terms of the wish lists going forward.
Well, I don't know. That's tough. Some people just don't want to get it, amazingly. But yeah, I mean, obviously, I would say My wish list would be that everyone would get vaccinated. On the wish list in the meantime would be that people continue to take this seriously. You mentioned that, you know, Uzbekistan had opened up the mosque for Friday prayers again. You're supposed to be vaccinated. That's what they tell you. I don't know how, if they check or how they would check if they did, you know, have you been vaccinated or not. But, you know, I know from talking to the director of the Uzbek service that he said that people don't take it seriously. No one wears a mask anymore. And really in all the countries, you know, even in Kazakhstan, we see the reports about people coming, you know, holding these big weddings and stuff. So things are better. There's a vaccine. It's better than last year. We didn't have a vaccine, right? You know, but it's not where we were before it started, you know. And so I would hope that the governments would continue to hammer home. And I know this is a tough message to send, and a lot of people don't want to receive it, but that we're not done yet. And you can't go back to having big parties, you know, and wandering around. The Czech Republic, where I'm speaking from, you still have to, indoors, you have to have a mask on for sure. You're eating food somewhere or something like that, but you can't, you know, and that's just the way it's got to be for a while long. Yeah.
In terms of the gathering, Bruce, in Uzbekistan, they are going to have election very soon, isn't it? And then schools are starting all around the world. And just there are kind of main events to look at how authorities are going to tackle that.
And we're, you know, it's too bad I know we're out of time, but, you know, Dr. Zhuzupov would be able to say, I think Kazakhstan already said that they're starting the year online. And Uzbekistan's already said that they're starting the school year. They're going to kind of mix it up. They're not really sure. I mean, it was half in and half out, saying, you know, maybe we'll be online and maybe we'll be in the classroom and stuff. So I don't, you know, that's a tough one. You know, certainly as far as like getting together and holding these big events, I would hope even on polling day, since you mentioned Uzbekistan's having elections, Kyrgyzstan will be too for parliament. I would hope you'd at least have the mask rule in effect when you went into vote. But yeah, I mean, this is something you got to tell people that I know nobody likes it. Yeah. You know, I want it to be better. But you for a while, for a little while longer, if you don't want to keep doing this for years and years, you got to.
Yeah.
Wear the mask and avoid big social gatherings and things like that.
Yeah, certainly, certainly. Thank you very much, Bruce. So just in one sentence, if you like to, Dr. Zhuzupov, in terms of the schools, what are the plans for schools in Kazakhstan going forward? I mean, it's starting, I guess, in a month or less than a month.
Yeah, you are right. And the Ministry of Health and Ministry of Education announced that the school year will start on the 1st September. So, and nobody, I believe, says something else about this. And we are preparing for this, and we are expecting, of course, increasing number of COVID-19 cases. But all teachers are recommended to be vaccinated first.
What about students, Dr. Zhuzupov?
Students the same. All schools and universities, colleges will start on 1st of September.
I'm saying the requirement also applies for the students?
Aged 18 and more, not for children. So, and we have plans to vaccinate pupils under age 18 from 12 to 17. So, but by using Pfizer, but it will become maybe this fall or even winter.
Yeah, I think there are more to talk about this, but we are out of time. Maybe we will get back to it. So with this, thank you very much, colleagues. Dr. Bauerjan Zhuzupov, Research Coordinator at the Kazakh National Medical University. Also, big thanks to Aybek Mukhamedov, the head of the healthcare program at the Soros Foundation in Kyrgyzstan, Farokh Yusupi, the director of Ready for Free Liberties Turkmen Service, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Ready for Free Liberties Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for your time today. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Ready for Free Liberties Media Manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.